you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
First time, it is of course a Tuesday, and every Tuesday we do this thing called Technology Tuesday. And today we're talking about the advancement of technology in the agricultural sector. And I love how we've opened up where we're saying it is a race against the population growth. And I'd like to hear from you if you are in the space, +27734703520. That is +27734703520. And I would like to definitely hear from you. Okay, let me take you back then, Justice, on this one in terms of is there enough food then in the world as opposed to feed the entire population, given that it's a race, this thing?
It's this question that you're asking, as I was sitting to myself, asking myself, do we really have like food, enough food to everyone? Looking at the fact there are so many places that still people are going hungry every day. For me, I kind of felt that to best to then answer myself, I was like, I think to restructure this kind of question would be, are we capable enough to have the food that is there? And it begged me to get to the answer that yes, we are more than capable to have enough food. And it takes me to the point of answering this question as a yes and a no, because people are still going to bed hungry.
Yes.
And yes, there are many places where there's a lot of wasted food, even in our country.
Yeah.
There are many tons and tons of wasted food that goes to the rubbish. But there's still a lot of people that are going to bed hungry. So I would say we are capable of producing enough. And I would say maybe 50% to 60% that there is enough food to feed anyone. And looking at some of the articles that have also been published by even the UN, there is enough food in the world that can feed everyone. But the biggest question is, why is the food not going to the people?
Yes.
Why are there still people going to bed hungry?
Yes.
So I would answer it as a yes and a no, because there are people going to bed hungry. And I would actually change it to say that, are we capable, which is yes. We are capable of making food and to feed everyone. But then the biggest stumbling block would be the food getting to the people that need the food.
Yeah.
Let me just put it that way in a rhetorical space.
Now, you've actually sparked something in me, because one of the things that I think we hear quite a lot, right, and it leads me to my question, which is, of course, around the fact that what are some of the reasons then that we have this growing hunger in the world? Because what I've heard is that we've got enough food, we've got enough capability to produce enough food, right?
That's true.
But apparently there's tons and tons of food that goes to wastage.
Yeah,
that type of a thing. Tell us that. Then how do we juxtapose the fact that there's people who are going to bed hungry, whereas there's food that goes into wastage?
Yeah, there is an article that has stated that about 70% of a lot of people that go to bed hungry are people that are in areas where there's a lot of conflicts.
Oh.
Conflicts like war, conflicts like, rebels happening, just those kind of conflicts.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we do have a lot of those conflicts, even in our continent right now as we stand. There's a lot of conflicts that are happening. And in those areas, there's a lot of people going to bed hungry because food cannot get to them. Because the farmers around there cannot distribute food.
Yeah.
Even the food aiders, the people that are coming, that are sending food from out of the country that needs to get the food to go to those areas so that the people cannot go to bed hungry. Those trucks, those logistics, the supply chain, whatever that's happening, cannot get to those areas because there is a conflict that is happening. Perhaps rebels are interfering with that food supply. Another big war that that we really witnessed how food and logistics is mostly affected by war was the Russia-Ukraine war.
Yes.
That kind of devastated a lot, and also a lot. And looking at those two countries, they are some of the best producers, biggest producers of agricultural products.
Yeah.
So that kind of affects how much food goes to the people and how people in those areas get food, which contributes to many to the growing hunger. Right. If many countries, say maybe 10 countries in the whole world, really depend on those areas that are currently having conflicts, that means when those countries are having conflict, food cannot get to those areas.
Yes.
Now they have to start sourcing food from somewhere.
Yeah.
Perhaps maybe they've got deep alliances with those countries and all of their funds are going to buy food from that country. And it's already a deal that is there for years. How the well else are they going to get money to get food to feed their country.
Yeah.
That means in essence, 90% to 100% of the population in those countries are going to go bad hungry. Even people in the deepest of rural areas. And looking at Africa as it is, we are having a lot of areas that are very much poverty stricken. So conflicts are one of the major concerns when it comes to the growing of the world hunger, because conflicts are happening in various places across the continent, not just in Africa, not just Russia, Ukraine. There's so many places that are having this kind of conflicts. And you know, the dark sheep that is currently walking around, the climate change that sometimes we don't talk much about, sometimes we do, which I believe because of this agriculture technology that is currently happening will help us a lot to solve, you know, fighting against climate change to produce enough crop yield so that we can, you know, compete with the rising demand. And so these two points actually are, for me, the key points that actually contribute to the growing hunger. I mean, looking at it in that perspective. And also going back to COVID, you know, COVID really slowed down a whole lot of things, agricultural-wise, and also the planting, you know. COVID really impacted a whole lot of supply chain and the amount of produce that has been produced in different areas because they couldn't keep up. They couldn't sell their crops, so many farms died out. They couldn't do as they used to do before COVID. So now they have to rely from import from importing the agricultural goods to their country, which at some point those areas cannot afford to do that. So in a nutshell, these three things are the ones that really contribute to the rising hunger in the world.
So if I hear you, listening to especially what you are saying as the three reasons that you've mentioned now and juxtaposing them with the fact that we do have the ability to produce enough for our growing population and all, it means that the world hunger is, we are engineering that ourselves. We are just self-destructive, if you want to say it, because it's the wars that are causing all this hunger in the world, which is unnecessary. So, Rona, on our own, we are killing ourselves.
We are killing ourselves. You know, I was reading somewhere, it says that the world has got so much resources that we has given us to our disposal. But ourselves are the ones that are keeping ourselves from using these resources in an efficient way, in a sustainable way, in a way that would benefit us. We are not doing that. Instead, you know, we are, it's just like saying the saying that you cannot get everything in a silver platter. We have that silver platter and we're just... we're just directly, you know, proving that saying correct. But indeed, we have the silver platter, but no, we don't want the silver platter. We want to do things our way. So, you know, there's so much resources in the world. Every country has got its own set of resources that can be used to benefit that area. And also some countries have so much good resources that can be used to buy from another country. And that country would need the resources that are being given from that other country so that things can go well, but we don't do that. Instead, we fight. Instead, we, you know, we kill each other. Instead, we want to destroy the resources that we already have. So it's just, this is self-inflicted at some point. But it's sad, even if we're saying this way, because someone is dying of hunger because of, you know, these self-inflicted wars that they have nothing to do with.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. And if you come to think about how much of an arable land we have in Africa on its own, I mean, we are able to grow literally anything you can think of because of the weather that we have, which is allowing us to grow quite a huge of the agricultural products that the world needs that other parts of the world can't because of their cold weather and
that is
so
true.
As
that
Africa, we've got so much potential, but if you come to think about it, we are the ones that are fighting so much. Yes, there's fights everywhere in the world.
That is very true.
But we
that
are the ones fighting ourselves.
True. Yeah, that is very true. There's nothing we are incapable of producing.
Sure.
Out of all the things we need.
Yeah.
We have everything.
Yeah.
We have everything.
Yeah.
Everything, Tagel.
Yo. Yeah, no, this is, I mean, I think you just put it into perspective for me because I often held the view that the world is going to come to an end because we don't have food. We can't be doing the fact that we've got arable, God-given land that's able to produce as much as this world actually needs. I don't see why we've got people who go to bed hungry. There's no reason for us to do that. But these wars that you mentioned, for example, are things that we are self-inflicting to make it, you know, a little bit difficult and curtail ourselves from the growth that we potentially have. I mean, my view might not be true, and I'm not a theologian, so I'll leave that to theologians. But
that is true. Yeah.
Agriculture is the very essence of God's creation. It's like you're connecting to God in some or other way when you are planting seeds there and all. Because Adam and Eve were taught to work the land, you know.
Yeah.
And that's agriculture. And so all these other fancy careers we have are fancy for whatever reason. But at the core of humanity is agriculture. It is, you know, planting and growing crops and all those sort of stuff. And that's the very industry we are defeating ourselves in, particularly as Africans, because I'm an African, so I'll speak to Africans. So, we need to really shift our mindset when it comes to this one. So there's this advancement in technology then that we are speaking about, and I suppose innovations that are supposed to make our agricultural activities a little bit better. Can you tell us about these ones and how they seek to assist us in meeting the growing need for food in the world?
Yeah, definitely. Let us maybe start with the one that you kind of made an example with in the beginning.
Yeah.
If I was listening attentively.
This is where we see if you're listening.
Thanks for giving me pointers.
I see what you just did there.
precision farming.
Yeah.
This one involves the use of technology.
Yes.
Like we're talking about technology, it actually uses technology like your GPS, your IoT sensors.
Yeah.
This is your Internet of Things.
Yeah.
We already talked about this. Your data analytics.
Mm.
This basically helps the farmer to monitor and manage their farms in a more precise way.
Yes.
Just to put it in, you know, in simple terms.
Yes.
So it actually allows the farmers to accurately apply things like your fertilizers, your water, if there's any need for water at that time, your pesticides. Because, you know, at some point you find yourself as a farmer, you just saw maybe two locusts and then you decide that, hey, no, perhaps there's 10 of them in the field. Perhaps there's 100 of them in the field.
Yeah.
And it's just that two locusts they were just passing by. Then you apply pesticides on the field, which actually will take, maybe your crops were about to be harvested.
Mm.
Now you cannot harvest those crops because you, at that time, you have to wait for a certain period until you can harvest them.
Mm.
But with these precision farmers, these technologies that have got sensors, you are able to, like, you know when to apply those pesticides if you need to, because now you have sensors in your field that help you to sense through the farm, and now you know that, okay, there's a lot of locusts here, we need to apply the pesticide. And because it's a locust, it's a locust, you know how much pesticide you need for that field. That will also help you to also predict. It will do it for you anyway, analytics.
Okay.
It will analyze when you will be able to harvest.
Yeah.
Should you have it? Should you, maybe if you were on a time where you need to harvest,
yeah.
Now that will calculate for you. So this precision farming, the technologies, the IoT sensors,
sure.
And this GPS now comes into the picture with when it comes to the planting of or the plowing of your
yeah.
fields. You would realize that sometimes when you go to these big farms,
yeah.
You would find that the truck that is currently plowing, it's
yeah.
also planting the seed,
yeah.
and also applying the right amount of fertilizer
yeah.
in one go. So
yeah.
it's just moving in one go.
Yeah.
So these kind of precision farming also goes to that extent when it comes to using the GPS. The tractor now is on autonomous. It knows where the field starts and where the field ends. It now already calculated how long it will take for it to finish the plowing and the planting of the seed. And also now your watering machines know when to water the plants, because they are now sensing the soil. They know
yeah.
the moisture of the soil. So this precision farming is just coming in big and making it easier
yeah.
for us to meet the growing demand.
Yeah.
Then you've got your automated machineries.
Yeah.
I made an example with the autonomous truck.
Yeah.
Now this also comes into the picture
yeah.
because this is already currently happening with one of the major tractor producers. They already have these autonomous trucks, which they don't have to be working during the day or during the night. They
yeah.
can work anytime.
Yeah.
And it also helps a lot with meeting the growing demand.
Yeah.
The self-driving trucks that are equipped with your
yeah.
GPS sensors yeah. and seed planters. Then we've got drones, with which we have already spoken about. They are growing in the agricultural sector with more sensors, sensing a lot of things that are happening in your field. And with drones, what I like about them, it will help a lot with crop poachers.
Yes, yes.
Yes, you know. There are people that will come and steal your meal
yes.
to sell them in the taxi ranks, and
yes.
you know them. Yeah, that will come and steal those crops,
yes.
and other people that will just come and steal. You've got maybe invaders like animals that are coming there, your hedgehogs, those small animals that are currently eating in your field. Then your drone can be able to sense that you have got this kind of stuff. Then you
yeah.
would know what to deploy. Perhaps maybe because some of these drones are big, they can chase away those animals. I'm just going to push it that side because
yes.
already it speaks to what the precision farming is all about.
Yes.
Then we also have this genetic engineering, which this is old. This has been there. This has to do with the crops specifically. Genetically engineering a crop that can grow in that specific area with that specific climate.
Yeah.
So it could be a soybean that easily grows in an area that is often dry or that doesn't receive a lot of rain. Or it could be a maize plant that grows specifically in the Limpopo region and one that grows where there's usually a lot of rain. So this helps a lot to meet up with the growing demand of towards the population that we're currently having, even in our country, which
yeah.
is also growing.
Yeah.
So these technologies are some of which are currently in increasing in the
sure.
world and everywhere. They are not new, most of them.
Oh, okay.
They are just growing more and more and more, and something that we can consistently look at as we, continue with our daily lives.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. I suppose you're underscoring what most people who have left, you know, or at least have spent some time outside of South Africa into your West and all that, they talk about how we are 10 years behind in terms of technological
yes.
advancement compared to where the world is. So it sounds like even in this instance, we need a little bit of that. So tell me then, there's a concept, regenerative farming. What is that? Is that also within these technological changes? You spoke about precision farming. But I'm hearing regenerative farming. Is it the same thing or two different?
With regeneration farming, I can say it's similar, what the same.
Yeah.
It can be brought to become something that I don't know how to put it precisely, but it can be something that is helpful when it comes to the farming sector, because it helps a lot with ensuring that there is a lot of sustainability when you are busy doing your farming. So just for me not to jump away from it, let me just put it at that. It helps a lot with sustainability or having a good sustainable farming methods that you're having in your farms or as you currently farm, more especially in areas where you do not have a lot of land that you can farm in, then that helps a lot.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Like I said, I've had an opportunity at least to be able to see where these agricultural things are going, and I've been hearing this regenerative farming and you know, from a sustainability point of view. So I thought let me just ask that one as well. Now these advancements and technologies that we are seeing there, I mean they clearly don't come cheap, right? So there must be some economic cost to it, and maybe even environmental costs. You know that. I suppose farmers would have to harness or incorporate into their operations and all those sort of stuff. What does that look like? What are the implications economically, environmentally as well, for them to bring the technology? And is there even appetite?
You know, when we're looking at the Africa, on our African continent, or South Africa per se, or just Africa in general, all this new technology comes at a very, very high cost. You know, it brings us to the picture that there is a lot of money that would need to be spent when buying or purchasing these entire equipments that we need, your autonomous trucks, so to say. You know, they're not very cheap. Even a small tractor that you need in your field, like that can do multiple things, that can carry your plowers and all this other heavy machinery that it would need. It's very expensive. And for it to get to almost each and every farmer, because every farmer is important in every country in our continent and every area in our country. Every farmer is important because they are actually helping to reduce the demand because they are matching up with the demand.
Yeah.
So they would need a lot of money, which comes back to the economy, right? So the amount of money that would then have to go for funding purposes, it would have to be increased. Now, it goes back to the question that can the economy of that said country or the continent afford to give each and every farmer such equipment? Or can the farmers themselves be able to afford those equipment that are needed that have to do with the technology, your drones, your systems, your GPS systems, everything? Would they be able to afford those things? Because those things also would need to be updated from time to time. And those updates might not come cheap. They might come at cost. And also, apart from that, you cannot just take a new truck, even if it's not autonomous, but these trucks have got a lot of gadgets on them. The cars we are driving these days. So many gadgets. And you have got a traditional tractor driver like Justice, who has been driving the normal old tractor. Everything is manual there. You can't just take me and put me inside that tractor.
True.
I won't know what's happening, and I won't be able to move the tractor. The poor tractor would break down within a few months because I don't know what is what. There would be need of capacity development. Now that also doesn't come cheap. It comes at a cost. Say maybe we bought a tractor to be used in a region like Limpopo, a said region in Limpopo. We have to capacitate the person who is going to be managing the tractor. We also have to capacitate the people that are going to be managing the farms. We have to also capacitate the people that are going to be driving the tractor. That helps everyone to be having the same, you know, skills and knowledge set. The one who's going to be supervising should know that this person now is doing something wrong. And should the person is not there, they should also be able to operate the tractor. Now, that is a lot of cost that is going to be coming. It goes back to the question that economically, can we afford all these things? How are finances going to come into the picture? And also this technology, Tapelo, they are so nice to have, right?
I'm sure.
And they help us. Yeah, they help us with a lot of things.
Yeah.
They help us to be precise. We can never be 100 precise as people.
Yeah.
But these technologies can actually lead us to 90% of precision. But this old technology can also cause some sort of environmental impact.
Oh, okay.
But this goes back to how they are being used, right?
Okay.
They can really be good when it comes to minimizing waste because now we are producing as much as we need. So this technology can calculate, okay, we need to produce cabbages that are going to feed 100 families, right? And calculations will happen. They will analyze. They will go to your Stats SA and analyze, okay, now the population in South Africa is this much. For us to produce 500 cabbages in this field, the soil will need to be in this way. You know, there's going to be a lot of analysis that will be happening. And that will help us to produce the amount of cabbages that we need for that period. And perhaps maybe a little bit of surplus as compared to if I'm going to be just farming, okay, I've got 100 hectares, I'm going to farm this entire 100 hectares with cabbages, only to run a loss at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So this really helps us a lot. This technology, economically and environmentally, really, really helps us so much.
Yeah, and it sounds like there's really great benefits to bring these technological advancements in the farming space. Now, because of the costs and capital outlay that you've just also outlined, is this now... And this is just an off question. Is this now where government should come in, either subsidizing farmers? I mean, the greater benefit is that with the technology, they can do more, they can plant more, they can get more returns, they can be more productive, and so securing the food security and food production and supply in a particular country, whatever the case might be. Is government supposed to play some or other role in bringing this technology? Because it is very, very expensive, like you also mentioned as well.
Yes, the government has to actually play a big role in this thing, because the government, as you know, the government has got its own mandate to ensure that the people of the country are eating.
Yeah.
And if the people of the countries are supposed to eat and it's the government's responsibility to ensure that happens, then they should make sure that the people that are supplying the food are supplying at ease.
Yeah.
If it means that the government has to buy these tractors and ensure that, okay, from farm A, because it would have cost farmer A 100,000 rand to plow the yard, then we will bring this tractor, it will come and plow the yard, then we'll take so much, which is going to be a less amount, just to maybe maintain the tractor and pay the person who's going to be driving the tractor. Either way, the tax is going to be paid.
Yeah.
But maintaining the tractor is, so to say, if they can do that, then it will help a lot of farmers. And at some point, those farmers will also be able to make enough capital to buy their own tractors.
Yeah.
You know, if they can do that, which I believe that they do have a program like that.
Yeah.
Perhaps maybe it's, I don't know how it deep are they using it, but the government needs to be super involved. They need to make sure that every farmer is able to meet you know, what their target goals that they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, something that is very nice that is initiated, I don't know if it's all around across the country, but in Gauteng, the Department of Agriculture, you can get an opportunity to have cows. They give you 30 pregnant heifers, and then you are supposed to repay those cows at the end of the 5 year term. That is really great, you know, for a farmer that was unable to get capital to get cows.
Yeah.
Now you have those cows, which you're supposed to return. So now it's your responsibility, alongside the free vet services that are currently in the Gauteng region, to help you to, you know, to ensure that by the end of 5 years, when you return those 30 cows, you are returning 30 cows, and also you have more than 30 cows in your crowd that now belong to you, and you're able to farm forward. So the government needs to do more of these things, and it need to be involved in order for us to for farmers to be able to meet this growing demand and also their target goals. And also the target goals that are currently coming from, expected from the government, saying that, oh, because you're a farmer, we really, really expect you to do so and such and such. But they need to be involved as a helping hand towards these farmers.
Love that. I know you're running out of time, but I just want to bring in this one. Before we look at maybe one or two trends that you think we should watch out in the future of technology and agriculture, are we not shooting ourselves in the foot by making these technological, clearly good advancements that are making agriculture insecure, the very basic thing that people need, which is food? Are we not shooting ourselves by making these technologies expensive? Yes, I get they should be subsidized, but the very manufacturers themselves, isn't there supposed to be some more social, you know, obligation or moral or human obligation? We can't have a machine that is going to, I suppose, plow for us at 10 million. No one is going to have that money.
That is very true, Tapelo. That is very, very true. This one, I think it goes back to the producers of these machines. I mean, this at some point, it takes us to try to understand what exactly are they really putting in this machine that makes it so expensive, right? That makes it so expensive. Can't they just come and take my old tractor that is still moving and that is still capable and equip it with whatever that they are equipping it with? And then life continues, and then I don't have to spend like millions and millions of money on this thing. So yeah, I can say it's shooting ourselves in the foot, because the same equipments that are supposed to help us farm precisely are very much expensive,
Yeah.
But then again, it also brings us to the fact that maybe then we should start to integrate I don't know how it's going to be done. It should start in varsity, where agriculturalists are having a good working relationship with IT sector, somewhat maybe able to come up with a solution of how they can farm better and do their things better. But what I like mostly is that many agricultural courses, you do have an opportunity to do your soil sciences experiments there. So that kind of helps you as a person to have a good knowledge of what you're doing. Sometimes you do really need this precision stuff, because you know currently what is happening and you only need to use it when you need it. You know, to avoid an overly dependence on it, which is going to be milking you a lot. But in the same time, yes, we are really being short on the foot, not shooting ourselves.
Okay, that's a good one.
I shouldn't get short, eh?
No. We should
cover me. We are being short on the foot.
Love that. What are the trends coming up?
I think we can look at blockchain.
Okay.
You know, apart from this artificial intelligence, which we've been talking about back and forth from the beginning, and the machine learning, because these trucks are basically using the knowledge that we gave to them, and they're making it better.
Yeah.
A blockchain, there is something that I can invite you and the listeners to go and look at, which is the Ethiopia Commodity Exchange.
Okay.
They use something similar to this blockchain, or if not blockchain. You know, blockchain is just the type of digital recording that also stores data in a more secure and transparent and which has got like more of security on it. So you're able to follow through what is happening in terms of the prices of things. So this Ethiopia Commodity Exchange deals mostly with your coffee beans. So people in the deep rurals are able to see how much a coffee bean is costing. It's just like because they do a lot of coffee trading, they're able to follow through. So this blockchain helps a lot, because it's not easily altered by anyone in between. The information is as is, and it moves in blocks that makes it difficult for a person to cut through it. So this technology, it's something that I feel like we are going to be seeing a lot happening in the near future, though it's already happening. but it's going to be there, and it's growing more and more and more. Then there is also something in called gene editing in your biochemistry stuff. This is this one. It's the CRISPR. It is called the cluster regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats. So this this is just a powerful technology that currently scientists it's making rounds in the science field a lot using enzymes to alter the gene. So they just cut it and make what they want to make. So which will then help us to keep up with the climate change precisely. So in our agricultural world, it will also help us to keep up, to help us produce crops that are drought resistant. Like I made an example with your crops, so it can help us to make those these crops that are also pest resistant in a way that will be more than what we ever imagined could be. So it's also more or less genetically modifying because it has to do with the genetics of that plant that we're talking about. So these two things are some of the things that we can really look at in the future, and they're growing so big, apart from the Internet of Things and the AI that we've been talking about.
No, I won't even attempt to pronounce that word in Zamik something Zamik that you said today. So I'll just
leave it to the biochemist.
Exactly. It sounds very, very fancy there. Now, as we draw to a close then, I don't know whether, because I'm thinking to myself, this sounds like a moral question, right, in terms of the goodness of these technological advancements, particularly in this agricultural space, which I think for me, like I said earlier on, is really a basic godly given industry to us, even though we are we're being shot, like you said, in the foot there, but it's really a basic industry for us. These increases and the benefits that come with this technological advancements in terms of productivity, being able to plow more, more hectares, and there's people that are losing jobs there,
That is very true.
Is it something that's unavoidable, or it's a moral question that we all have to answer in the interest of, I suppose, the bigger picture of making sure that everyone has food? Perhaps one or two people may lose their jobs, but we are feeding 10 more people with two people losing their jobs.
Yes, in most cases, it's not just 10 people. Imagine a big farm that is currently farming oranges, right? And that big farm, they now deploy a tractor with a big vibrator machine that harvests or that can harvest those vibrator trees. And back then, you would get, a lot of farmers and a lot of farm workers that are going to be working around the farm, which would something that would take them 2 hours to do the thing the tractor can do it within 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So imagine how many people are going to lose their job. Not just 10. A lot of people are going to lose their job to one truck.
Yeah.
To make things worse, even the truck driver is going to lose their job because now the tractor is autonomous. So this is just the painful part about this entire technology that we're currently having at the moment that is so growing. And though there's negative part about this technology, it also poses so many good things that we've been talking about. Environmental concerns, so to say. I did make an example about planting more than what we need, which results to waste and also kind of a wasteful expenditure. And also having this efficiency that we can have with so many these trucks and the technology, like the gene editing that I just spoke about, it helps a lot with us planting a whole lot of crops that are going to grow, and we are at least 90% sure that these crops are going to grow because they can stand the test of the climate change. So in a way, there's always going to be negatives, and there's always going to be positives about this entire technology. And I think looking at it, there is a lot of positive mindset towards it as compared to the detrimental factors that it will cause. I think in technology, there's also so much focus on getting to the end goal, but are not really looking at how people are going to be capacitated towards the technology.
Yeah.
And this just brings us back to also the question you ask about regenerative farming.
Yeah.
That if all comes to it, why can't we also use our own natural ways of keeping up with farming without using this technology? And regenerative agriculture that you did ask me about also comes in as a good stance towards this solution. As if we can keep a certain land in this way, then we can have control and also keep jobs for those that are going to stick into traditional farming, and also continue supplying with those that are going to stick with it. Technological farming, which is currently happening. So in a nutshell, that's all I can say to that.
Ah, fantastic. Any last thoughts there as we round up this one? Hi, Justice. Can you hear me?
Pedro, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I was saying that I love that. I agree with you 100%. How do we close this one? Bring it home.
Pedro, I can no longer hear anything from your side.
Okay, let me see if you can hear me. Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes, now I can hear you.
Ah, fantastic. I was saying that I agree with you 100%. You know, and I think it's about systems thinking in a way, finding a way for us to think about all these moving factors all at the same time without necessarily losing the bigger picture. That's how I would interpret what you're saying. And I was saying that how do we bring this one home?
Yeah, like this kind of it's facing a lot of gene editing.
Yeah.
I cannot hear you properly.
Is it? I can hear you. But yeah, okay. I think we'll end it here for today. But I think we've really had some great insights from yourself, and I just want to say thank you so much. I think we'll pick up on part two on this one because I really have other questions that I wanted us to look at. But thank you so much, Justice. Really appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Have a good one. That was, of course, Justice helping us understand the issue of technology and, I suppose, agriculture. As these things grow in terms of technological advancements and being incorporated into how we do business every single day, I think it begs the question to say, how do we do these things in a sustainable manner? I'd like to hear from you. +277 3470 3520. That is +277 3470 3520. What is your experience of technology and agriculture?
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.